MyAudiobooks.ai presents The Ocean Can Lose Habitat Without Losing an Acre. Imagine a marine protected area, a stretch of ocean that a government has drawn a legal boundary around and declared safe. On the map, it is a clean green polygon, so many thousand square kilometers, fixed, countable, reportable to international databases. Now imagine that inside that polygon, the sunlight is failing, not disappearing, diminishing year by year as the water grows more turbid, so that the zone where light reaches is thinning like a ceiling slowly lowering. The polygon does not change. The boundary does not move. The official record still says the reserve is exactly as large as it was the day it was created. But the habitat the reserve was meant to protect, the sunlit water where most ocean life happens, has quietly shrunk inside it. That is not a thought experiment. In 2025, a study in the journal Global Change Biology analyzed nearly two decades of satellite observations from NASA's MODIS Aqua instrument, covering the years 2003 through 2022, and found that the ocean is getting darker on a planetary scale. Light attenuation, the rate at which sunlight is absorbed and scattered as it travels through water, had increased across approximately 75 million square kilometers of ocean, an area representing about 21% of the global ocean surface. The study's models estimated that the photic zone, the sunlit upper layer, had grown shallower by more than 50 meters across 9% of the ocean, and by more than 100 meters across 2.6%. The researchers were careful about causes, and this article will be careful with them. Ocean darkening has multiple drivers that differ by region, and the honest way to present them is as a cast of suspects rather than a single culprit. Near coasts, nutrient and sediment runoff from farms, cities, and rivers thickens the water and feeds plankton blooms that shade everything below. In some regions, shifting plankton communities and dissolved organic material change the water's optics without any obvious human fingerprint. In the open ocean, changes in circulation and productivity, currents moving warm and cold water into new configurations, some linked to a warming climate and some to natural variability, alter how much light the surface layer absorbs. The study's own framing is plural. Several possible drivers, varying by place, none of them sufficient as a single global explanation. The study measured optical change, how light moves through water, not the fate of every organism beneath. Not all darkening is destruction, and not every darkened region has lost biodiversity. But a fifth of the ocean's surface measurably transmitting less light than it did two decades ago is not a curiosity. Light is not decoration in the ocean. It is infrastructure. This article is about the collision between that finding and the way humanity accounts for ocean protection. The thesis, stated plainly, is this: marine conservation has learned to count area and is beginning to learn to count depth. But global darkening reveals a harder problem. The light-defined habitat inside a protected volume can contract while the legal reserve remains exactly the same size structure, and no current accounting system would notice. A reserve can lose habitat without losing an acre. This is a measurement argument, not a claim that marine protected areas are useless, and it will be tested against the strongest objections below. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library. To understand what is being lost, it helps to understand what light does down there. The photic zone is the layer of ocean where enough sunlight penetrates to power photosynthesis. Nearly all ocean life depends on it, directly or through the food web. The phytoplankton that produce a large share of Earth's oxygen live there. The fish that hunt by sight feed there. The larvae of countless species develop there. The daily vertical migration, the largest movement of animals on Earth, in which trillions of creatures rise toward the surface at night and sink at dawn, is choreographed by light. Oceanographers sometimes call the photic zone the ocean's living room, and like a living room, it is defined by where the light reaches, not by where the walls are. The nightly migration deserves a moment of attention because it converts an optical fact into a biological one. Every evening, copepods, krill, lanternfish, squid, and jellyfish rise from the dim depths toward the surface to feed under cover of darkness. Every dawn, they descend again, out of sight of visual predators. The biomass involved is estimated in the billions of tons, and the journey is calibrated to light levels with exquisite precision. Many species track specific intensities, riding a particular shade of twilight up and down the water column as if it were an elevator. When the light at any given depth changes, the elevator moves. A darkening ocean does not merely dim the lamps in the living room. It rearranges the schedule of the largest synchronized behavior on the planet in ways ecologists are only beginning to measure. Satellites measure the light's reach by watching the ocean's color. Water that is clear and empty looks deep blue from orbit because pure water absorbs every color quickly except blue, which scatters back to space. Water thick with plankton, sediment, or dissolved organic matter shifts toward green and brown because each added particle and pigment intercepts more light. Instruments like MODIS Aqua record that color across multiple wavelengths, and algorithms translate the spectrum into an attenuation coefficient, a number describing how quickly light dies with depth, which in turn yields an estimate of how deep the photic zone reaches at that spot on that day. Multiply that measurement across two decades of daily satellite passes, and the result is not a snapshot, but a film, a global map of how the ocean's light budget is changing over time, pixel by pixel, season by season. The 2025 study is essentially a careful reading of that film. The 2025 study found the budget shrinking across a fifth of the ocean, with the steepest declines in places where human activity meets the coast and in regions where circulation patterns are shifting.
Now, hold that map next to the map of marine conservation. The world's headline commitment to ocean protection is Target 3 of the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework, the agreement often called 30 by 30. At least 30% of terrestrial, inland water, coastal, and marine areas effectively conserved and managed by 2030. The target is explicitly area-based, 30% of area. It includes language about representativeness, connectivity, and effective management, but the number that gets reported, celebrated, and negotiated is the percentage of the map covered by protected boundaries. Area is what conservation counts, because area is what maps can prove. Conservation scientists have known for years that area is not enough, because the ocean is not flat. A 2024 study in Nature Communications developed a global three-dimensional assessment and found that marine protection remains heavily biased towards shallow realms, while fishing pressure extends through deeper layers. The protected fraction of the ocean thins out with depth, even where the map shows full coverage. The same water column that appears fully protected on a treaty map can be unprotected below a few hundred meters, which is where much of the extraction actually happens. Earlier scholarship proposed planning in volumetric units, voxels, three-dimensional pixels, the ocean's equivalent of dividing a building into floors and rooms rather than measuring its footprint, precisely because flat polygons cannot represent vertical habitat and vertical threats. This three-dimensional turn is real progress, the product of a decade of serious work, and this article does not claim otherwise. The three-dimensional literature also taught conservation an invaluable habit: distrust the total. When protection is reported as one number, the number hides the distribution: shallow versus deep, coastal versus pelagic, the open water far from shore, where enforcement is weakest and the largest ecosystems operate. The pelagic zone, the open water column away from the coasts, is where most of the ocean's volume lives, and where protection has always been thinnest. The darkening finding extends that same distrust one step further. Even a perfectly distributed, perfectly three-dimensional number can hide a changing interior. But three dimensions are still not enough when the fourth dimension is moving. The existing three-dimensional approaches divide the water column into fixed depth bands, surface to 200 meters, 200 to 1,000, and so on, because fixed bands are stable and administrable. Where the seafloor intervenes, planners fold in bathymetry, the shape and depth of the underwater terrain, so that a voxel knows whether it sits over a canyon or a shelf. The geometry is genuinely sophisticated. The darkening finding breaks the stability assumption that makes all of that geometry administrable. If the photic boundary itself is rising, if the layer where light-driven life happens is shallower this decade than last, then a reserve drawn with perfect three-dimensional accounting in 2015 is protecting a different, smaller sunlit habitat in 2025, with no boundary change, no legal event, and no report that would capture it. The coordinate system itself is non-stationary. The property that defines the habitat does not hold a stable baseline, but drifts through time. And a static ledger cannot track a moving asset. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. The accounting gap becomes concrete when you ask what a protected area is supposed to protect. Suppose a coastal reserve spans 1,000 square kilometers, and at its creation, the photic zone beneath it averaged 100 meters deep. The protected sunlit volume is 100,000 square kilometer meters of living space. Now suppose coastal runoff and warming-driven stratification raise attenuation over 15 years, and the photic zone thins to 70 meters. The map is unchanged. The 30 by 30 database is unchanged. But the reserve has lost 30% of its sunlit volume, the layer where photosynthesis, visual predation, and the daily migration concentrate. No acre was lost. The habitat loss is real, invisible to the ledger, and currently uncounted anywhere in the world's conservation reporting. One might object that losing the lower photic zone matters less than it sounds, because the deepest light is barely light at all. There is truth in that. The photic zone's lower reaches are dim, and definitions of the boundary vary. A 2025 paper argued the photic zone should be defined by a wider range of light-mediated biological processes, not photosynthesis alone, precisely because different organisms use light differently, and the meaningful boundary is not a single textbook line. That refinement cuts both ways for the accounting problem. It makes the boundary harder to define, but it also makes the stakes higher, because the processes at stake, visual hunting, larval development, migration cues, extend deeper and matter more than the photosynthesis-only definition suggests. So what would a better ledger look like? The proposal this article floats is deliberately modest, a diagnostic overlay, not a replacement for protected area coverage. Call it light-adjusted protected volume, the protected horizontal area multiplied by the locally observed biologically relevant light depth. A rigorous version would integrate seasonal and long-term light distributions rather than multiply two crude averages, and it would weight different depths by the biological processes they support. The point is not a perfect metric. The point is to expose what acreage cannot see, whether the world's protected ocean is gaining, holding, or losing the habitat that makes protection worth the name. A reserve system reporting stable area, while its collective light-adjusted volume contracts, is not lying. It is answering a question nobody asked. The strongest case against this whole framing deserves a full hearing, because several parts of it are correct. First, protected area targets were never meant to guarantee a fixed quantity of habitat. They establish governance, restrict extraction, and preserve resilience under change. And a reserve that is darker than it used to be is still a reserve with rules. Second, darkening is not a universal death signal. In some regions, it reflects increased phytoplankton or productivity, more life, not less. And equating optical change with habitat loss would repeat the mistake this article criticizes, measuring one instrument and calling it the disease. Third, no single optical boundary can capture species-specific light thresholds, food web adaptation, vertical migration, oxygen, temperature, or fishing pressure. A light-adjusted volume could become just another single number that conceals more than it reveals. Fourth, dynamic MPA research already exists. Scientists have proposed protected areas with moving boundaries that track species and oceanographic features. So the general idea of non-stationary protection is not new, even if that literature tracks horizontal movement rather than a globally shifting light boundary.
Each objection lands, and the thesis survives only in narrowed form. The claim is not that marine protected areas are failing or that darkening equals death. It is not that light-adjusted volume is a validated biodiversity index. It is a proposed diagnostic, and it may prove useless. The claim is that conservation accounting currently measures the container and not the contents, the legal boundary, and increasingly the geometric volume, but not the time-varying physical condition that makes the volume habitat. Whether the contents are improving or degrading is an empirical question the current ledger does not ask. Asking it costs little. The satellite data already exists, flowing daily, free to any conservation authority that wants to compute the overlay.
The barrier is not technological. It is institutional. Treaties are negotiated in the language of area, because area is what diplomats can defend at conferences, and changing the unit of account means renegotiating not just a metric, but the political bargains built on it. Every conservation official who reads the darkening study faces the same quiet choice. Keep reporting the number the treaty asks for, or start computing the number the ocean is actually offering. The first is safe. The second is honest. The history of environmental measurement suggests the honest number eventually wins, but usually only after a decade of being called premature.
What would prove this article wrong? Four findings would disprove its thesis, each concrete. First, if existing global NPA monitoring already incorporates time-varying photic depth and reports protected habitat in biologically weighted volume, then the gap this article describes is already closed, and the critique is obsolete. Second, if species, productivity, and food web data show no meaningful ecological response where modeled photic depth contracted, then the optical change is a curiosity, and the habitat argument collapses. Third, if darkening-associated losses turn out to be fully offset by lightning and ecological gains within the same protected networks, then the aggregate protected habitat is stable, even if individual reserves shift.
Fourth, if the proposed light-adjusted volume adds no predictive value beyond temperature, oxygen, chlorophyll, and management effectiveness metrics already tracked, then it deserves to be abandoned as redundant instrumentation. Each of these is answerable with existing or near-term data.
There is a pattern here that extends well beyond the ocean, and it is worth naming before the ending. Environmental accounting has always preferred the measurement that is stable over the measurement that is true. Forest cover is counted by satellite pixels, not by what lives beneath the canopy. River protection is counted by kilometers of designated waterway, not by flow, temperature, or dissolved oxygen. Wetland area is mapped by boundary, not by the water table that makes it wet. In each case, the stable proxy is genuinely useful. And in each case, a changing climate is quietly decoupling the proxy
from the thing it was chosen to represent. The ocean's darkening is one entry in a longer ledger of moving baselines, and the question it raises is not really about light.
Which returns the story to the green polygon on the map. Somewhere tonight, inside a boundary, drawn with genuine hope and real legal force, the last 50 meters of light are rising a little higher above the seafloor than they did the year the polygon was drawn. And the creatures that follow the light are rising with it. And nothing in any report will say so. The map is not lying. It is answering the question it was built to answer. Where is the boundary? Well, a different question goes unasked. What does the boundary still contain?
The open question is whether conservation can learn to count the contents before the divergence between map and territory grows too wide to ignore. 30 by 30 will be met or missed in the language of area, because area is what the treaty measures. But the ocean does not read treaties, and the light does not respect polygons. A protected ocean, measured only by its borders, may prove to be exactly as large as promised, and exactly as empty as its accounting never said. Between those two sentences sits the entire future of what protection means, and it is still, genuinely, undecided which one the data will eventually confirm.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.